Hello, ramblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing, IG at rambling and gambling, and the old email rambling and gambling podcast at gmail.com. First up today, we've got The Athletic's Mike Sando coming on. Among other things, we'll be talking about the NFL Quarterback Betrayal Index. The NFL Quarterback Betrayal Index. Also, his training camp tour and some surprise teams that can win the Super Bowl. Then we've got our buddy David Purnham of ESPN coming back on the pod. Dave and I are going to chat about how the future of NFL betting isn't sides and totals. A lot of really smart people seem to think it's player props, and actually fantasy sports have a lot to do with it. That's an interesting one. Dave's going to explain what's going on there. Without further ado, let's get things started with Mike Sando. Mike, I know you've been touring training camps, and I believe you're headed to Seahawks camp today. Did you just have to see the Drew Lock Geno Smith showdown up close?
I did. I watched their game the other night. I actually live in the Seattle area, so I've been on a training camp tour. I visited teams that are far away, and I covered the Seahawks for 9 years. If you go back to the late 90s into the 2000s, I was covering that team. So I still know a lot of people over there. It's always great to get out and just see any team. But yeah, I need to have a feel for the home team because I do a fair amount of radio around here, and I'm generally interested. I think this is an unprecedented situation, really. Almost in Seattle, usually when you move on from a top quarterback, someone who's perceived to be a top quarterback, who's not injured or old or has off-field problems, usually you have another option besides Drew Lock and Geno Smith, right? If you think of like the Colts, when they kind of reluctantly moved on from Peyton Manning, they had Andrew Luck. So everyone went, well, I can kind of see what you're doing. Peyton Manning's had a bad neck injury. But this is definitely unusual to move on from a Russell Wilson, who's not Peyton Manning, but still a top 10 quarterback, when you don't have an alternative.
What other camps have you visited so far?
Well, I did, let's see, Chicago, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, New England, Giants, Eagles, and Washington. I did 10 teams and put about 2,500 miles on a rental car.
That's pretty good, man. I knew that you were here in my backyard and in the Washington area recently. What has surprised you the most about this trip? Any of the camps you've been to?
That's an interesting question. If I look at, let me think of all these teams that I went to. It's funny because, you know, I don't go to camps for the same reasons most reporters do. I think most reporters go and they're going to do a notebook on, hey, I saw this receiver look good. And I'm more working on bigger projects that might not even involve the teams that I'm visiting to a direct extent, but I'm having conversations with people in front offices, people in on coaching staffs about pieces like the ones we'll talk about here. One of them that ran on Friday that I thought was pretty interesting. So, you know, in terms of who looked good or what at practice, I didn't go into it looking at that because really in one day, you're not going to go there and be like, oh my gosh, Josh Allen's good, right? I mean, there's nothing that really happens on a one day at camp for me that's going to change my opinion of the team in a substantive way.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. At the risk of getting too off the beaten trail here, at the risk of getting to be too much of a journalism nerd, it seems to me, reading your pieces, being a fan of your work, that you probably go to these camps not so much, like you said, for what's happening on the field, but I get the impression it's probably to talk to people off of the field. Is that accurate?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I love the conversations around football. I love trying to research what is interesting. I really do consider myself to be a researcher. So one component of that for me that's really fun is I'm on the Hall of Fame selection committee. So I'm trying to find criteria we can use so that our votes make sense and we can explain them, right? So I did a piece recently, for example, trying to evaluate elite wide receiver production across eras to be able to adjust for eras. So we could look at, you know, somebody who played in the late 70s on par with somebody who's playing 5 years ago. And so it helps me to go to camps and discuss those types of things with people who've been around. I'll give you an example. You go to Bills camp. Well, Leslie Frazier's on the Bills. He defended a lot of those receivers in the 70s and 80s, and then he's been coaching ever since. So even if I'm not going to quote him in a piece or do something, it's valuable to me when he says, hey, you know what? Actually, this guy here was really a tough matchup. Or he knew a little bit about Harold Jackson, wide receiver from a long time ago, a little bit even before his time. But he told me two or three things about him that I just file away. I may never even use it in a story, right? I'm probably never going to quote him on it, but it's valuable to me. So those types of interactions are, really enriching.
I love that. Let's talk about one of these deeply researched pieces. The one that you just mentioned came out last week, the NFL Quarterback Betrayal Index, which is a great title for a column, by the way. This is over at The Athletic. First off, can you please explain what this index is?
Yeah. So, we're always trying to figure out how the games were won and lost. And so much of the time, the quarterback gets too much of the credit or the blame. And so using a fairly advanced but been around for a long time metric called EPA, expected points, we can isolate the contributions of offense, defense, and special teams to the bottom line in football, which is winning an individual game or winning over a period of time. And so what the Betrayal Index did is it looked at quarterbacks who have led really productive offenses, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford at different times, Aaron Rodgers, certainly Patrick Mahomes, Tony Romo even was up there. But at the same time, their own team's defense and special teams was not good, was even poor in some cases. So, when you wonder, God, why isn't Aaron Rodgers winning as many Super Bowls as Tom Brady? A default answer would be, well, Tom Brady's just a clutch player, this and that. And he is. But you can't tell me that Tom Brady's 8 times better than, or 7 times better than Aaron Rodgers at winning championships. And so you look at and you go, well, geez, Tom Brady has had really good defenses and special teams for most of his career. The one year that Aaron Rodgers had the best defensive special teams component in Green Bay, they won it all. And they've had a bunch of other years, as Philip Rivers has, as Matt Ryan has, as Stafford did until he got to the Rams, where they're in the bottom 10 of the NFL. It's very hard for any quarterback to overcome that. So that's what the Betrayal Index is. It goes from those guys like Drew Brees, who's got the number 2 offense out of, I think, 54 quarterbacks over the last 10 years, but might have the 51st of the 54 defense special teams component, right? And you go all the way down to the bottom, I believe it's Sam Darnold, who has a really, really bad offenses, but has had good defense special teams. And some of those guys at the other end get to stay around and be quarterbacks a longer time because that component of defense and special teams props them up. It lets you have a winning record with Mitch Trubisky over a 3-year period and so forth.
I encourage people to check it out. It's a really interesting column. The full top of that list, Drew Brees, number 1, Justin Herbert at number 2, Tony Romo and Matt Ryan were tied for 3rd. Way down at the bottom, you had probably not a shocker here for too many big NFL fans. Sam Darnold, Mitch Trubisky. Do you see any current quarterbacks making big moves on that list this year, either good or bad?
Well, I mean, I think the really interesting one is Justin Herbert with the Chargers, because they've been so bad on defense and especially special teams, but they did hire a defensive head coach in Brandon Staley last year. They do. They did get Khalil Mack. They did get J.C. Jackson, the corner from the Patriots. And then they have some people like Derwin James, who are already really good. And Bosa is on their team, who are really good. So I think there's an expectation that, hey, you've got this good quarterback. He has a 15-17 starting record, not because of him, but because you're unusually bad around him. Your defense and special teams is like an anchor around a swimmer's ankle, right? And it's hard to keep your head above water as you're swimming. You're working harder, and you're only 15-17. If you could upgrade that this year, which I think they're banking on, maybe they're a team that is in the mix and going for a championship. If not, there's going to be some scrutiny on the Chargers team building and coaching.
On a recent Athletic Football Show podcast, you and your colleague Robert Mays named some teams that you think can win the Super Bowl. Of course, Bills, Rams, Chiefs, et cetera, were on there. However, you had a couple less obvious ones that I thought were interesting. I'm going to mention a couple of them, and I'm hoping that you can give me kind of just a real brief summation of why you think they've got a shot to win it all. First up, the Colts, currently 22-1 to win it all on FanDuel. What do you like about the Colts?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Colts have been a decent team that just has been looking for leadership and consistency at the quarterback position. And it's no guarantee that Matt Ryan's going to provide that to them. But I think that he's somebody on that betrayal index who has had such bad defense and special teams and offensive line really lately. And shoot, the weapons fell off last year, that the hope would be that, you know, okay, he may not be as good as Stafford at this stage of Stafford's career, but you could have a Stafford type bump. The odds are not that they're going to win the Super Bowl, but I think they're a team that you could envision a path if Matt Ryan is protected better and has a backing of at least an average to above average defense, special teams component, they could be in the mix. Now, AFC is really hard, so it probably is a longer shot, but I think they're a team, if you're listing the teams that you could conceive winning a championship from, you know, this season, I would have them on the list.
Here's an NFC team sitting at 40-1 on FanDuel, the Vikings.
Yeah. So the Vikings, the interesting thing about the NFC is, you know, besides Rodgers, besides Brady, you start running out of really top amazing quarterbacks. You have good quarterbacks like Matt Stafford's in there. Dak Prescott's good. But as I look at my quarterback tiers from this past season, there's so many of the top quarterbacks are in the AFC. So you have a different path forward in the NFC that's probably a little bit easier. You could make a case if you're Washington and you wanted to paint the glass half full for Carson Wentz, you could say, oh, he's the sixth or seventh. He might be the sixth best quarterback in the NFC, right? So Kirk Cousins is a veteran quarterback for Minnesota who I think has, I wouldn't necessarily call it defense special teams betrayal. I think he had head coach betrayal. I think it was so true, you know, so obvious that Mike Zimmer just for whatever reason was cranky with his quarterback. And I think he undermined him a little bit. And that's not to say that Kirk Cousins is a great tier one quarterback. I don't think so. I think he's on the borderline between tier two and tier three. I think he can win with them, but maybe they get a little bit, maybe he gets to relax a little bit and a little bit of, you know, energy there, more positive energy for them could put him in the mix in an easier to win conference.
One more of these. Raiders are on your list. They're currently 40-1 win it as well.
Yeah. The thing I feel about the Raiders is, you know, there's been so much talk in that division about Denver with Russell Wilson coming there, but I think you could make a case that Josh McDaniels calling plays for Derek Carr with Darren Waller, with Devontae Adams now, with Hunter Renfro, is a potentially potent combination. Now, look, they have issues on their offensive line. No one's saying they're perfect, but if their defense with the, you know, adding Chandler Jones, having obviously having a good pass rusher there already in Max Crosby, maybe they're a team that takes a bump up. And I'll give you an example. If you look at that defensive special teams betrayal stuff that I was doing, I believe there was 1 year in Derek Carr's career when they ranked in the top half in the league in defense special teams combined. I think they went 12-4 that year. So, you know, it's not that complicated of a formula. If you get enough things right around a good quarterback, not a great quarterback in Carr, but a good one, you can suddenly be in the mix.
Let's go around the league a little bit. Tom Brady is taking some time off in the middle of training camp due to a personal matter. This seems like a decidedly non-Tom Brady thing to do. Should Bucks fans be worried? Have you talked to people in the league about this?
I think he's got so much equity built up as a team guy, team player, someone who does things the right way, that he's not getting the scrutiny that another player would. Certainly if a young player, you know, if Zach Wilson decided to take a week off right now, or even somebody, you know, somebody, if Russell Wilson was taking a week off right after what he's been through, I think there'd be a lot of scrutiny. But with Brady, you sort of go, okay, you know, it's a weird situation there. Right. He retired. He came back. Clearly, there's something's been worked out. And when you hear a personal private matter, I haven't seen a bunch of reporting on it. Maybe people have speculated what it is. Sometimes you might give a little bit more leeway. Right. I mean, who knows what he's dealing with? It could have been that he said, I'm only going to work half the time in camp. Tough. Or it could have been, hey, we're dealing with this issue here and it's really important to me to be there. And I'm going to handle this privately with my teammates. And I appreciate you respecting my privacy. Right. I think with someone like Brady, who's got so many championships, been such a team player, has taken, you know, contracts that help the team in terms of their structure. You feel like, okay, you know, you can make an exception for him.
There's the alleged tampering in the background of all this, too. His being named in some of the stuff with the Dolphins, being penalized. I don't know if that has anything to do with this. I just think it's an interesting set of circumstances.
Right, yeah, it now. Could. Right. There's enough going on there behind the scenes and reports that you do wonder in the back of your mind if there's, in the absence of knowledge, your mind races into conspiracies and what it could be. And I try to not go down those roads too much, but I think with them, there's been enough weird stuff going on this offseason that you have to leave open the possibility that it could be almost anything without speculating that it is almost anything.
Peter King had some really interesting Jimmy G nuggets in his column this week, saying that when the other 89 guys on the Niners roster are practicing, Jimmy G's doing his own thing. He doesn't even have a playbook. He doesn't attend meetings, and he barely knows new quarterbacks coach Brian Griese, apparently. Any guess where Jimmy G ends up? And does any of this surprise you? Again, this is a unique set of circumstances.
It is a unique set of circumstances. I mean, I think the weird thing, the thing that made this weird was that he was injured all offseason. I think otherwise there would have been a trade. But the quarterback position is unlike other positions, right? Any team could use another tackle, another guard, another corner. You don't just add another quarterback who's been to, has some skins on the wall, so to speak, for Jimmy G. And I think as you look at, I've been looking, waiting, okay, is someone going to have a extreme need at the position? And we'll see, the jet situation, maybe Zach Wilson dodged one there, and maybe he's going to be okay with a decent enough timeline. But that's certainly a place where he should have familiarity with the offense. Mike LaFleur running the offense there, very much related to what the 49ers are doing. Robert Saleh, the head coach, comes from the 49ers. So that would be one if they ended up having to go a longer period of time. If they had a poor evaluation of Flacco, if Flacco were to become injured, you could certainly see something like that happening. But there will be a point in time here, at some point as we get closer to the season, where I think some kind of decision needs to be made, because otherwise his full salary goes on the books guaranteed for the 49ers, which, maybe they're fine doing and they try to move him at the trade deadline. But there's a lot of different things there, and also sort of like a courtesy to the player, right? I mean, if you've appreciated Jimmy G and what he's done for the team, do you just kind of maximize your team power that could end up screwing him over by holding on to him longer than is appropriate? I think those are all things for a general. That's why the general manager makes a lot of money, right? The head coach makes a lot of money. They got to figure that out.
Got to ask you a Commanders question while I have you, especially given that you were at camp recently in your quarterback tears column, which is absolutely incredible. Came out, a month ago. You had Carson Wentz in the third tier. So that's right by guys like Jalen Hurts, Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff. What do you expect from Wentz this year? And did you get any good Wentz tidbits while at camp?
Yeah. And so basically the quarterback tiers, just to give everybody a heads up off the top, I pull 50 people who are coaches and executives in the NFL every year and have them put each of the quarterbacks that are going to start, veteran quarterbacks, into one of five tiers. Tier one is the best. You need the least amount of help around you. That's Rodgers, Mahomes, Brady, those types of guys. We had Josh Allen, we had Herbert, Burrow move into there this year. Tier three is sort of, I think if you're in the top two tiers, basically your team's not looking to replace you. You get into tier three and you look at tier three: Kirk Cousins, Jimmy G, Ryan Tannehill, Mac Jones, Baker Mayfield, Carson Wentz, Jalen Hurts, Jared Goff, Trevor Lawrence, Jameis Winston. Other than Lawrence, those are all guys that you could keep or move on from, right? That you could probably win with them, but if you could upgrade, you would. So I think Carson Wentz is clearly descending, but probably got a little bit of a bad rap in Indy. I think Indy's owner really trashed him on the way out. And while there are things you would like to change about Carson Wentz, and that includes just his overall a public approach to the game, I think a natural accountability would serve him well, the ability to do that, to take responsibility and point out where he needs to improve. I don't think he's as bad as he was made out to be. I think if you had said before last season, hey, he'll start all the games basically for the Colts, they'll have a winning record and they'll have 27 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, they would have done a 5-year deal. But a lot of other things came into play that, frankly, kind of colored their view of it. And I do believe that he still has a tendency to melt down and make the bad mistake. I don't know that you can train that out of somebody as much as you would like to, right? I liken it to, you know, if you have a really bad temper, you can do breathing exercises and you can really work to not lose your temper. But in the absolute heat of a situation when things spiral and go unpredictably, you might be more prone to show your temper, right? And Carson Wentz doesn't have a bad temper, but he has this, you know, I don't know if it's a football gene in the heat of the moment. So he may throw the left-handed pass falling into his end zone that gets running for touchdown, right? More so than some other guys will. And so I think the fear is that that's always kind of going to be there and that he's not necessarily consistent enough or great enough in the other areas to elevate the team. But if you put, you know, you have a good scheme and you balance them up and you give them a good defense, those types of things, I think you certainly win with them. And the Colts kind of did.
Last one. I don't want to keep you too long. The quarterback tears column always gets a ton of attention every offseason, and people always eat up the quotes from anonymous, you know, GM, scouts, whoever. I am always really impressed by it journalistically because you get 50 plus people to actually sit down and do this. Can you briefly, I think people will be interested in this. I'm definitely interested in this. How do you get people to talk to you? How do you build those relationships?
Well, I've got, this is my 25th season of covering the NFL. And in general, you know, when I speak with people in the NFL, it's it is a two-way street. You know, you have to be able to be, have something interesting for them to talk about too, right? I think if you're a young reporter, that's harder. A lot of times you go into a place and you kind of, you know, you need them more than they are interested in talking to you. But hopefully after having, you know, 25 years in the league and really, like I said, drilling down in a lot of these topics that people in the league are interested in too, then you have discussions that everybody wants to have. You're not just taking, if that makes sense, right? You're not necessarily collaborating, but you're both bringing something to the discussion that is interesting for everybody. And we all like to talk about quarterbacks. It's kind of a fun thing to talk about. Well, we talked to a lot of people throughout the league about a lot of different things that are interesting. I've been doing that today already off of the defense special teams thing, where, you know, the betrayal index. I've been going back and forth with people in front offices over different components of that. And so I don't know if that's any kind of a secret, but, you know, 25 years time on task, you know, is a lot. And hopefully over that time, I've accrued some, you know, some knowledge, or at least a way to look at it, right? That might be interesting for the readers and hopefully for a few of those people in the NFL too.
Sounds like then it's as much about just building a rapport and they're enjoying having a conversation with you as it is about information going both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And I think with that comes a responsibility too, you know, and how you handle that. I try to always be, you know, balanced in the reports on the players, because there will be some harsh criticisms in there, but I try to balance that out, because you talk to 50 different people, you're going to get different views. We're going to get somebody who puts Baker Mayfield in tier two and somebody else who puts him in tier five, right? So I try to include a range of the opinions in there. I think that's interesting, and I think it's fair to the players. Now, that said, someone will pull a quote out of there, you know, and run with it, and it looks like it's an imbalanced look at a certain player, this or that. But I think for the most part, we do a pretty good job of having interesting discussions.
You do an excellent job. And like I said, big, big fan of your work. Really appreciate you coming on the pod. Mike, where can listeners find you? Plug away.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me at The Athletic first and foremost. You can go find any of my stories. I've got a big archive there at theathletic.com. You can find the app. You can search by author for me, Mike Sando, S-A-N-D-O. You can also find me on Twitter at Sando NFL. And I'll be ramping up, I believe, the Football GM podcast with Randy Mueller, 35-year exec. You can find that through The Athletic Football Show on The Athletic.
Will do. Thanks again for coming on. Mike Sando, The Athletic, excellent, excellent reporter. Also, your pieces age very well. So if people haven't checked them out, go check them out now. They don't, you know, it's not to the minute information. So your stuff reads well even a month or two later. Thanks again, Mike.
Sure, appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, fan favorite David Purdom of ESPN is back. Dave, what's happening? You staying cool in Georgia?
Yeah, we're getting ready to get some highs in the 70s later this week. I'm loving it. It's been a hot couple months out on the soccer pitch for sure.
I bet. What's that, soccer with the kids?
Yeah, I'm coaching. I coach a soccer team, a U-12 girls team. We've started team camp at the end of July and been going through August. It's been a little toasty.
My man, I bet. Georgia, hey, good for you. Stud gambling reporter and amazing father, David Purdom. How do you like that? All right, let's get into this column from this past week. It was really interesting. It was about how player props are becoming more popular than point spreads. And just to be clear for the listeners, we're talking people betting, let's say, Tom Brady to throw 300-plus yards as opposed to the Bucs -7. That would be an example. And you write that even though point spreads have been published in some newspapers since the 50s, things are changing in large part. This cracked me up. Because of guys who grew up playing fantasy. Explain that to me.
Yeah, so as you know, we did not have widespread legal sports betting in the U.S. until just recently, a few years ago. So most people who wanted to be invested in sports grew up playing fantasy, right? Playing in fantasy leagues and fantasy contests. And so their investment in the game was with individual players and flipping around on Red Zone and watching their team made up of numerous players from different franchises score points. And I think that's starting to transition into the sports betting world where, as you said, more people are betting on over under on a quarterback's passing yards or a running back's rushing yards or number of touchdowns thrown than they are than the pregame point spread. I'm a dinosaur. You know, I like to bet Saints -3 and sit back and watch the game and root it out. And that's not how it works anymore. Most of this young generation like yourself there likes to play these player props.
I appreciate being included in the young generation. And yes, this does make perfect sense to me because I also play, you know, sides, totals, all that. But I also do a ton of player props. And when I was reading your article, I was like, you know, that's probably true. I don't know why I didn't think of this before, but I played fantasy my whole life before gambling was legal. And here I am now. I love the props. A couple other nuggets that jumped out to me in this one. You talk about how the prop market has matured. And listeners, pay attention to this one. You can't just bet the unders anymore.
Well, you could back in the days, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, what I was told, these professional bettors used to just make a killing just betting unders blindly almost. And that was because when they kind of researched the odds that would be throwing up there on a player, Tom Brady passing yards, they seemed to be almost strictly primarily based on his average passing yards per game. Matchups didn't seem to play any kind of role in it. So if they found a good defense to play against Brady or a bad defense to play against Brady, you know, they looked and they just continually played these matchups and they played them under. And it worked for a long time. The market has since caught up. Now, you know, it's the lines are much more efficient. There's much more information, much more matchup oriented data that goes into the over unders to create these odds. So it's not quite as easy, but people are still beating them.
The most popular player prop market is the odds to score a touchdown. And I'll give one example that you had in your column last February, the Super Bowl. More people at PointsBet, a sports book, PointsBet, wagered on Cooper Kupp to score a touchdown than wagered on the spread of the game. That is so crazy to me for the Super Bowl.
That was a wild stat to me, too. I just couldn't believe that. But, yep, that's that touchdown market. A lot of people love the first touchdown market. Who's going to score the first touchdown in the game? You'll see guys that will wait and look for those injury reports. And if there's a guy that's ruled out late, Dalvin Cook, for example, was given to me, Vikings running back. He got ruled out late on a Sunday. All of a sudden, his backup, Madison, his odds were like, you know, 50-1 to score a touchdown in the game. Well, 51 when he's a backup. Now he's the starter getting the bulk of the carries. It's a good price. So people are watching that and looking for different ways to take advantage of the breaking news. And it's not no longer, hey, this quarterback's out. We're going to play the other team plus the points, right? Now we're going to play the backup quarterback's over passing yards. And they're looking for ways to do it that way. So it's a new generation, new approach.
Where do you think we go from here? Because you write that player props are on the way up, spreads are on the way down, but still more people overall bet point spreads than player props, right?
Yeah, I think the days are numbered, though, of that. I don't think that for many more years we will have more action on the pregame point spread than we will have on prop bets. You know, a lot of people have been talking up live betting where you're betting during the game and so forth. And a lot of that is on prop bets. Even that points bet sports book we talked about, they said this year they're going to allow you to place in-game prop bets, player prop bets, and parlay them. So anytime during the game, they'll have an updated number on Brady's over under passing yards. You'll be able to be put that into a parlay, add it in with the Bucs defense or whatever you want to do. And it's just going to be this nonstop market of action all the time. And I think that's going to overtake the pregame point spread bettors.
That alone shows you how popular the player prop market is, because I cannot imagine how much of a headache it is for these sports books to come up with in-game, same-game parlay player prop lines. I can't even wrap my head around how they're able to do that in a timely manner.
Plus, you got all the, you know, the latency from the television broadcast is another big issue with this line. So it's a lot of work. And the other thing I would add, the visibility of the liability that these parlays present, right? You get all these bets coming in and all these variety of markets and clever ways that people are betting them. And then you end up with this massive, massive liability on something maybe you're not really paying attention to. Maybe it's a half a sack or something like that, and you don't realize it. So the books are scrambling to improve their visibility of the liability, but they're also trying to expand this market as much as you can because their margins are fat on these things.
Right now, overall, I think it's fair to say that limits on player props are still lower than point spreads. Do you see that changing over the years? Do you think these limits go up as books get sharper with this?
I think as the volume increases, that they will have more ways to, you know, you get bigger volume, you can take more action because you can balance it out the best, and they'll get their lines more efficient as well. The pro bettors that I talked to, they said, you know, it's $3,000 to $5,000 they can regularly get down, and that's spread across several books. So you're probably getting 500 max down. And if you are too sharp and you're betting, you're going to get cut off pretty quickly. You're not going to be getting that those size limits. But all that does is make them find a partner somewhere, some square guy like me. Hey, place this bet, whatever, you know. So there's ways to do it. You can either come in through the front door or come in through the back door, as they say. So I do see limits increasing right now. For most of them, they're plenty high, right? Plenty high. It's plenty high for me. If I can get down $50, that's good for me.
You and me both, man. Anything else you want to mention on this one? I have one other topic I want to ask you about.
The last thing I would mention, there was the stat that really caught me alive. Only, I think it was 10 or 11% of parlay legs placed at FanDuel, these same game parlays that are based on one event, only 10 to 11% of the legs of those were represented by the point spread money line or over under total. The rest are props. So I thought that was a pretty kind of eye-opening stat, just how popular these props are and how popular they are with parlays.
Couldn't agree more. It shows you just how much things have changed. Here's another way another thing to show just how much things have changed. Major League Baseball just announced, I think it was last Friday, its support of a betting initiative that'll be on the ballot in California in November. We actually talked about this once before on the pod. This was several months back. Give me the quick version. What's going on here, Dave?
Yeah, so Major League Baseball came out in support of one of the two initiatives that are on the November ballot in California that would legalize or authorize sports betting throughout the state. The one that they came out in support of would allow online sports betting. And this is the initiative that's backed by their partners, their FanDuels, their DraftKings, the big online sports books. There's a competing initiative that would restrict it to tribal gaming, and it's backed by the tribal gaming operators. You would be able to only place your wagers in person at the tribal casinos and or four racetracks they're also looking at. So those two are on the ballot. Baseball said that, you know, we think that the visibility that online betting provides actually helps protect the integrity better than if somebody's coming over the counter and just placing $100 or forking over cash, basically, over a bet. So they came out in the support of the DraftKings FanDuel online initiative in California. It's going to be very close. Most polls show that neither are going to pass at this time, which is crazy because California is just a massive, massive market.
Do you think the other leagues are going to throw their support behind this initiative as well?
I'm kind of surprised they haven't already, to be honest. You know, I'll figure the NBA will come on board here pretty soon. I would think NFL will eventually as well. This is just a huge, huge market. And if you go with it online, fully mature online California sports betting market, you're talking about generating about $3 billion in revenue from what some analysts estimate. If you keep it only to in person, it's like 1/10 of that. We're looking at about $350 million just for if you're in person betting. So it's a massive, massive, massive initiative. And whichever one gets through, you know, it's a big difference in the revenue that'll be generated.
Couple thoughts here. One, I just want to underscore what you're saying. Everybody you talk to who's in the business says California is essentially the holy grail of sports betting. It's such a big state. There's so much money to be made. So I just want to underscore that. And then two, this just seems to me to be another one of those, holy cow, look how far we've come in a relatively short amount of time. The fact that Major League Baseball is saying, yes, we want gambling on our sport. PASPA was overturned in 2018. It hasn't even been 5 years.
You remember Commissioner Bud Selig saying that gambling would be the death of all sports if it were to be legalized. So now they're putting sports books in stadiums. We got one at Nationals Park over in your guys in Capital One Arena. And now the Commanders, they're getting ready. They got initial approval tomorrow. Will be another meeting with the Maryland gaming regulators. The Commanders are hoping to get a final approval. They're going to plop a sports book right there into FedEx Field.
That, you know what, that's an interesting one. And we didn't talk about this ahead of time. So if you don't know, don't worry about it. But I'm under the impression that right now NFL rules say that if you open a sports book in your stadium, it cannot be opened during a game. Is that accurate?
That's correct. That's my understanding as well. If you put it inside the ticketed area, right, where you have to buy a ticket and you go inside and that sports book is inside there, the betting windows at least would not be allowed to be open. Now, Arizona Cardinals have one, and it's, quote, attached to their stadium over there. And I believe they are allowed to keep it open. So there's a little bit of thin lines being drawn there for sure. You know, I'm hoping to talk to the Commanders, learn a little bit about their plans. I still wonder why these things are so popular, these sports books and stadiums, because we're all placing our bets online, right, on our phone. Yeah. Why do I need a sports book? This is just another sports bar, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, currently at FedEx Field, it's in Maryland. So currently you can't bet online, although that's supposedly going to change soon, potentially by the end of the year. But that makes sense. Maybe that's what they're doing, is it technically it's going to be detached, because I don't know how familiar you are with FedEx Field. There's not a lot happening around there. For instance, you know, downtown arenas get a little bit of foot traffic on a normal day. FedEx really doesn't. There are people who like work out and jog around the stadium, but it's not like it's in the middle of a ton of shops and other things. There aren't big crowds of people there when games aren't happening.
So, I mean, if they put one inside the stadium, or would you think people would come on off days to come hang out there at FedEx Field at the sportsbook?
Hard for me to believe. I'm there all the time covering stories with everything that's happened with the Commanders on and off the field. And there are always people there, but I'm telling you, they're working out. That is the people who are around FedEx Field. It's a great place to work out. There are people who live around there, but it's by no means like, you know, in the center of the city where you've got foot traffic all the time. It's nothing like that.
Be interesting to see how that plays out.
I don't know, man. I'll keep an eye on it. What else? Anything going on?
Oh, that's it. Preseason football. Got college football here in a couple weeks. Got some fun stories on some wild college football bets that were placed over the offseason that next time I hop on, we'll talk about.
Can't wait, man. Anything specific you want to plug?
No, I can't think of anything right now.
My man, can't wait to have you back on. I appreciate you always doing this. I was not kidding when I said at the top of this interview, you are a fan favorite, and I appreciate you, man. David Purdom, ESPN gambling reporter. Check them out all over ESPN, Twitter, you name it. Thanks again, bud.
You got it.
There it is, ladies and gents. Thanks to Mike, David, producer Parrish. We'll be back next Wednesday, as always. Although next Wednesday is going to be a very special episode. It's actually a repeat of one we did last year. We had Football Outsiders Aaron Schatz on to preview the whole season. We kind of dig through his Football Outsiders almanac and do a deep dive, and we're going to do it again. So he's coming back. He might even be the only guest next week. That's how in-depth I want to go. So Make sure you come on back to get some really good nuggets that are going to help you with your NFL bets for the season. Also, we talk about a ton of futures on these episodes. I have a lot of fun with it. I think Aaron does too. So make sure you come on back for that one. Otherwise, thanks as always for rating, subscribing, reviewing IG at Rambling and Gambling, and the old email ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Everybody, have a great week.